It's a great delight to be here this morning. Thank you very much for the invitation. And it's wonderful to be here on your anniversary Sunday as well. When I come, I bring with me as well the greetings of Baptist Together, Baptist World Mission, and the new General Director, Dr. Kang Sang Tan, has just started, and I bring his greetings to you as well this morning as ours. So, there's the picture. Right, next slide, please. Our vision as Baptists Together is that we're, as I said earlier, a network of 2,000 churches, 13 regional associations, 5 colleges and 3 specialist teams who share a vision to be growing healthy churches in relationship for God's mission. Next slide. You are part of this amazing network. So 2,000 churches, Baptist churches in this country, 52 unions across Europe, the Middle East and Central Asia, and 42 million members worldwide are part of the Baptist World Alliance. And of course, that's only a small part of God's worldwide church. And so one of the things I want to come today is to kind of, by being here, connecting you with that big vision, but also to come to say thank you, which is the next slide. I want to say thank you to you for all the ways that you encourage and release mission. Through your prayer, which has been very ably demonstrated by Peter today, through your participation and through releasing people from here to serve the wider Baptist family, through your mission that you do here, faithfully holding out the word of life in this place, and through your financial giving. God has given us this incredible mission. And there are so many opportunities before us in these days. And we trust that God will provide the resources that we need to play our part. But we recognise that it takes all of us to kind of share our resources together in order to make that happen. Just very briefly want to say that, and we'll need to flick through the slides on this because they'll build up. There's 4 key areas that we work in as Baptists Together. And the first one is pioneering and planting. So as I said, there's 94% of the population to reach. We need to do more things and we need to do new things. And so we do this together as Baptists Together through grant funding, through strategic thinking and working together to plant new churches and to plant new pioneering expressions of church. We also equip local churches for mission, churches like you, to be supported in the mission that you do and to do peer support on all sorts of things. And there's lots of specialist advice and support that's available for you from the specialist team. So we equip local churches for mission to be the best they can be where God's put them. We also invest in godly leaders. I'm sure that you value very much the godly leaders that have been put amongst you, both those that are paid and those who volunteer. Leadership is vital for us to fulfil our vision. We are a people movement. So whether it's local church-based pioneers, regional ministers or national leadership, we need great and godly leaders. And so we use our resources to encourage and train and support and equip and release leaders. And then the final thing we do is enabling Baptist voices in the public square. Did we get there? Oh, yes, wonderful, it works. And this is mainly through the Faith and Society Specialist Team. We're able to make sure that Baptist voices like yours are heard in the public square of media, government and current affairs. We kind of, as a local church, we sometimes feel we can't say anything or we're not heard. But actually, by bringing all our voices together, we can share something and speak to our community. So I just wanted to encourage you, to say thank you, and to help you to feel a part of this bigger picture this morning. If you want to keep in touch, I've just got another slide here about different ways to keep in touch. There is a magazine, which I bought some copies with me today. They're free. You can look at it online free, or you can get a subscription. If you're an email sort of person, you can get a monthly email update that tells you all sorts of things that are going on. If you like more of a news thing, there's Baptist Times Online, which you can get online. If email is passé, I know for some of you it's like, email? What? Or some of you I know are getting are getting to grips with email. Others are kind of thinking this is of the ark. But anyway, so lots of social media, as you can say there. Facebook, Twitter, Flickr, even I've just gone onto Instagram, Pinterest, Google, all that sort of stuff. There's a lot of social media stuff. So if you want to connect, go and find Baptist Together or me, and then you'll hear what's going on and see what's going on, because it's really exciting. So there we go, my little thing, just to help you feel connected. Next slide, please. When I've been praying and preparing for you, this passage from Isaiah seemed to be the one that captured what I sensed the Lord wanted to say to you at this time as a church. Verse 19 says, "See, I am doing a new thing." So I want to look in this passage about what this passage says about God's new thing. Well, I'm going to stay with that for a minute, thank you. So to grasp God's new thing, you need to understand the background to this passage. Isaiah is speaking to his people during their captivity, okay? They're in captivity in Babylon, and he's coming to them in their captivity and promising them salvation and deliverance. In verse 11, he talks about the fact that he's their saviour. In verse 14, he says, "I will topple the Babylonian regime, your oppressors." But he's coming to talk to them in their oppression and bringing them this good news that they will see salvation and deliverance. And it's interesting, isn't it? Because this was amazing news. Imagine that you're in an oppressed state and someone comes along and says, "Hey, you're going to be freed, you're going to be saved." That's really, really amazing, isn't it? But there's also an aspect of it which is frightening. God's people had been in exile for so long. Many of the people would have been born in exile. They didn't know anything different. So there must, on the one hand, have been that sense of a longing for freedom, of homecoming, to go home, to go back to where they had come from. But yet, for others, there would also be that sense, that tremendous challenge of striking out into unknown territory, of going home to a place they didn't know as home because they'd never lived there. And yet within their people, that was a sense of going home. So a real mix of both, the longing for home and the fear of what that journey might involve. Despite all the hardship and the oppression they had faced, they were still leaving behind their security and their familiarity. It may have been oppression, but it was the oppression they were used to. So God's new thing is both amazing and exciting, but it's also disruptive and challenging. And some kind of identify more with one end of the spectrum than the other. Some people find change like, "Yeah, bring it on." And others like, "Oh, no, I'd rather not." And we need to recognise where we stand. But change brings both challenge and amazing excitement, but it also brings disruption and challenge. So next slide, I like this quote from C.S. Lewis. "Hardships often prepare ordinary people for an extraordinary destiny." And we see that a lot in the Bible, don't we? We see it both God's people being shaken up by things that are happening to them, like we've seen here in Babylon in exile, that God uses the situation that's happening in the climate at the time to talk and to speak and to work with his people. But we also see that when God works directly himself, he disrupts things. Just think of Easter, the crucifixion, the resurrection. These were disruptive things that broke into life and changed things radically. Pentecost, pouring out of the Spirit. When God breaks in, it's challenging, it's disruptive. Life doesn't carry on as normal. And we see lots of upheaval and disruption in our world and our nation too, don't we? Globally, we're seeing unprecedented mass migration. Poverty, war, extremism, ecological events that are, you know, what is going on? In our nation, we see political uncertainty. We just seem to be in this prolonged period of political uncertainty, don't we? Continuing economic instability, huge challenges to health and education. And just the reports on the radio this week about the health service, about the prison service, you know, the structures. And if you work in those areas, you will know that the infrastructure is creaking under the strain of how do we continue these things? And in our own movement, we touched on it earlier, there's the enormity of the mission challenge. There's the pensions deficit. We have to face it as Baptists, an ageing demographic. We've got huge possibilities for community engagement with all the strains that are happening elsewhere. Local authorities coming to churches and saying, "What can you do?" So massive opportunities, but what can we do? Can we do more? Can we do this? And we see it in our own lives too, don't we? Through bereavement, through illness, through redundancy. These things challenge and disrupt us. And even in the so-called good things like new jobs and moving house and children and grandchildren, there's still disruption and challenge, isn't there, in our own lives. But God is a God who is at work in and through the disruption. And I'm very struck by that story when they're out on the storm on the lake and Jesus turns around to them and says, "Where is your faith?" And I feel he says that to me sometimes, "Where is your faith?" He comes and he comes to us in the midst of the disruption and challenges what we've become and asks us, "Where is your faith?" And so he's calling us to renew our commitment, I believe, to seek him and to walk in his ways. And so the next slide has got a question to reflect on. God's new thing shakes things up and involves disruption and challenge. The question is, are you willing to be shaken and to grow as a disciple in the midst of the shaking? Okay, well, the second bit about this passage I noticed is stark, staringly obvious. God, but it's worth saying, God's new thing is new. Okay? So, along with the message of hope and deliverance, Isaiah also brings a message of reassurance. Reassurance that the God who brought them out of Egypt and into the promised land so many years before can do this again. And we've experienced that this morning. You know, the God who built that church there and built this one here and this, that's the same God will go with us into the future. This is the experience of God's passage, this of God's nature. And if you look carefully at what this passage tells us, you can see in it there's a lot about the nature of God, if you look carefully. Verse 14, God is described as Redeemer, as holy. Verse 15, the Lord, Creator, King. Verses 16 and 19, he's described as the one who makes a way. Verses 20, he's a generous provider. So there's a kind of amazing snapshot of God, really, just in that, in the language that's used in that passage. And these verses are also full, packed full of Exodus imagery, reminding God's people, you know, as we've done, remember that, da-da-da. He's telling the story. Remember how I brought you out of Egypt. God is faithful and God goes with them. So there's that real rooting in the nature of God and the faithfulness of God. And so verse 18 is a bit strange, really, isn't it? Because he's going, all this God's faithful, think about how wonderful and God faithful God is. And then he turns around and says, forget the former things. I'm like, hold on a minute. You were just telling me to remember them and now you're telling me to forget them. Now, which do you want me to do? Remember or forget? Well, I think the emphasis here is forget the former things in the sense of don't dwell on the past. God is a faithful God, but he's also a God of surprises. And I like this picture I found. Do not look back. You're not going that way. Do not look back. You're not going that way. So how do we look back or dwell unhelpfully in the past? Well, I think the first way we can do this in churches is through what I call good old days nostalgia. Yes? We kind of sometimes hark back to some former golden era, and in doing that, we kind of avoid engaging with the present. Yes? Yes. Okay, a few people get where I'm at. And maybe on an anniversary Sunday, that's something to hear, that we don't want to look back to the past as if it was some glory golden era when everything was brilliant and always fine. You know, when the first church started, it was amazing. When that was built, when this was built, when that was done, oh, it was amazing. When there were 500 children in the Sunday school, do you remember that? You know, see those pictures of all these children, sort of, and people, oh, well, you know, we used to do this, and the Sunday school outings and everything. When there was a choir, when we did this, when men wore suits and ties and ladies wore hats. When we opened the Wells Place Centre, you know, there can be this danger to look back on this golden era. And that's not to say that we don't celebrate and cherish all that is past and the wonderful ways we've experienced God's faithfulness in this people and in this place. But we're called not to dwell on the past, to hark back to a golden era in a way that avoids engaging with the present. Because at the end of the day, we're all tempted, aren't we, to try and keep things as they are. We like things like that. As the picture says, don't look back. You're not going that way. Forget the former things. Do not dwell on the past. Don't hark back to some golden era. But the other way we can dwell on the past in an unhelpful way is that we can allow the past to become a straitjacket that unhelpfully defines our future. Now, I know nothing of your church history, so I don't know, and are your individual histories, because it doesn't have to be in this church, it can be what you've brought with you from other churches, that maybe there have been disagreements and broken relationships, church splits, frustrations and disappointments, too powerful leadership or too weak leadership. I heard a story recently from a fellow leader who told me that he went to a church where 15 or 20 years before they'd had elders and it had been a very negative experience for the church and they had abused power. And so when he arrived at the church, it was kind of like, we're never going there again. And it was that closed off. They closed off part of this because they'd had a bad experience and that was it. We're never going there again. And actually, he said over the years he'd been there as minister, they'd begun to gently look and to work through what had happened and what God was saying to them and where they were. And they had just recently appointed elders again. And it was good because they were able to work things through and not let their unhelpful experiences from the past define the future. And so I think it's important to, if there are any of these, to identify them and to name them, not to dwell on them, but so that you can turn to the Lord in them and not let those experiences be a straitjacket for you, but enable reflection and learning and growth. And then there is actually positive meaning and purpose in it all as well, isn't there? It's not just a bad experience that we're all hurt by. It's an experience under God that we can redeem and find him and walk him into it. Next slide. As Corrie ten Boom says, never be afraid to trust an unknown future to a known God. So whether the past is good or bad, one thing this passage makes clear is that if we're heading into new territory, the way we've always done it isn't going to help us now if we want to keep in step with God's purposes. And that, my friends, is the nub of what I feel the Lord laid on my heart for you. There's something here about the way you've always done it isn't going to take you into the future. Okay? So that's for you to prayerfully ponder. Don't rely on the familiarity of the ways you've always done it, because God is wanting to do a new thing here in you. The Lord says to you today, I believe, be reassured by my faithfulness in the past and trust me to do a new thing now and into the future. And whatever you do, focus on who God is. And that's the point about the past as well. It wasn't what God did then that matters so much as the God who did it. Do you get the difference? It's not so much what they did, it's the God who did it. So we see back the faithful God acts in this way and this way and this way and this way. And the brilliant news for that is the faithful God is going to act faithfully here. We just don't know how yet. But he probably won't do the things he's done before. But he will still be faithful. It's the God that did those things that is vital as we move forward. And in the passage, they were reminded the same God who brought them out of Egypt will guide and deliver them again, not necessarily in the same ways, but to achieve the same purpose. The same God who has been with you over the years will guide and deliver you again, not necessarily in the same ways, but to achieve the same purpose. Forget the former things. Do not dwell on the past. So my second reflection is that God's new thing is new. Let it be new. And here's a question to ponder in your heart. Are you willing to continue to keep in step with God's new ways. As an individual, as a church, as a community, when God says, this is what I'm doing, are we prepared to follow the faithful God, even if it's maybe an unknown way to us? The third aspect of this passage that I noticed is that God's new thing requires perception. And again, we've touched on that this morning. I sense it here. You know this. And there's another slide here. Now, to perceive means to see God's new thing. And perception requires a level of prayer and discernment that arises from intimacy with God. If it was easy to see, we'd all see it. But we have to perceive it. We have to perceive what God is doing. I had a lovely moment this morning. As I was driving here, I saw a couple walking down the road. I wish I could have stopped and got out and taken a picture. You know who they are. I hardly describe it. If you just looked at it, it was a couple, they're grandparents now. They're walking up the road, backpack on the hand, hand in hand. I know them very well. And there was just a beauty. Anyone else would just look at them and say, some old couple walking up the road. But do you know what? I know something of their story. And that was beautiful. There was something beautiful in that about faithfulness and about the way they had made their way through so many ups and downs and challenges in life that it was just beautiful. And I wish I could have taken a picture because it was beautiful. And then as I drove along and thought about it, I thought, well, actually, if I perceive in that, because I know I perceive something in that, how much more does God perceive in us the beauty of our lives and our faithfulness? Oh, that touched me. Anyway, perceiving, it comes from prayer and it needs intimacy with God. It's not about pestering God with our own agenda of what he needs to be getting on with in our humble opinion. It's about seeking him for our hearts more closely to resemble God's heart, for our lives to be more closely in step with his spirit, for our hopes to reflect God's hope for creation. And I was at a meeting a bit back and I found this, and another lovely picture. It's at Hindley Hall, if you ever want to go there, in Leeds, I think. And I just love this picture. I kind of just stumbled across it. I thought, I'll go and get a breath of fresh air. I was in the middle of a 48-hour meeting. But isn't that a fantastic picture? And to me, that just says so powerfully something. There's something about the face upturned to God. There's something about the arms outstretched toward God and the kind of the openness and the vulnerability of that picture. And then when I looked at it really closely, you can see, I think, she's actually on her tiptoes. There's a kind of a yearning, a longing, an openness. I just love that picture. And that's something of the heart of perceiving. We want to perceive what God is doing. And this is key because everything then becomes an overflow of that deep relationship to the Lord. Our love, our witnessing, our discipling, our worship, our serving flows out of that intimacy with God. You were asking me earlier about great stories. A different great story is from a church in Southend. It's a pioneering thing called 57 West. And a youngish leader went down to Southend and he felt that God had put on his heart to work with young adults and clubbing, young people coming out of clubs and the clubbing culture. And for about a year, 18 months, they tried to serve the clubbing community and minister to them after the clubs turned out. And, you know, kind of it was okay. They did some things and it was all right. But they just kind of felt that it wasn't really something not quite right, you know. So they were kind of thinking, they've kept praying, doing this thing. And it was kind of okay, but not really seemed to be really going. So they thought, right, it's New Year, we will stop. They had a kind of shop premises that they were using as the base for their thing. And so what they did is they said, we're going to have a day of prayer on, I think it was New Year's Day or whatever, and just gather as a few handful of them that had been involved in this project. They gathered for prayer and they started praying and just giving the day over to the Lord and praying. And do you know what? Halfway through the day, there was sort of knock on the window, and there was a group of homeless people. And they said, can we come in? So they said, well, yeah, we're praying, but if you want to come in, come in. So they came in and they joined in and they prayed together and they sought God. And then actually, as the day unfolded, they suddenly like, oh, okay. And so it just completely changed it. And they realised that God had brought them, these nine homeless people. So they stopped trying to minister to the young adults and they started ministering to these homeless people that God had brought to them as they sought him. And from that, they've had this small but tremendous impact in Southend through this project. And if you go on our website, you'll see pictures of baptisms and all sorts of things. Because they stopped and they prayed. And when they sought the Lord, he brought to them what it is that his heart was for them. And so one of the things I long for and pray for our churches and all churches in this country is that we would be spirit-filled communities with Jesus at the centre. Churches which are so attentive to the Lord that he only needs to whisper and we're there like a shot. Yeah? That's so completely captivated by God, so attentive to what he's saying. He's only just got to drop a whisper and we're there. That's what I long for. Churches that have completely laid aside their own agenda and make room for him to do what he wants. Next slide. Which is why in 2015, I shared a call to prayer, which became known as the Beacons of Prayer call, asking churches and leaders to seek the Lord in prayer and make room for him to come and do what he wants to do in and through us. And so the third reflection that I want to share with you is the next question is this. If God's new thing requires perception, the question is, are you willing to continue to seek the Lord and to look only to him? In terms of praying for our nation and praying for God's kingdom to come, there's actually going to be a National Beacons of Prayer event on the 2nd of November, Thursday the 2nd of November, from 9 to 9:30 at Baptist Union Council. We're going to be praying and we're going to be live streaming that through Facebook. So if you want to join in with us praying for our nation, praying for our churches, then please do. And so the last thing I wanted to finish with this is about beacons of hope. And again, I feel you've got this. After we'd been praying with the Beacons of Prayer theme for a year, we felt that God was calling us to develop that into Beacons of Hope, because in the midst of all the challenges and all the disruptions we found, we just felt God saying to us, now is not the time to shrink back for us as churches. We need to be out there in our communities as witnesses in the places that God has put us now more than ever. And so your Wells Place Centre is absolutely fantastic. And you are just right in the middle of things here, aren't you? Streets and people and community. And I just sense, I know you know it, but I want to encourage you in this. To be a beacon of hope in this place, holding out the good news of Jesus, being willing to go where God calls you to go. Because our communities yearn for hope and life and goodness. And we want to share that with them. And so my longing again is to see every single one of our churches seeking the Lord in prayer, making space for him, and being a beacon of hope, sharing the good news of Jesus in our communities. And you are being a beacon of hope here. Will you continue to stoke that beacon, to keep it burning, so that people in this community will see the Lord? And so to draw things together, then the headlines. God's new thing shakes things up. God's new thing is new. Don't dwell on the past. Thirdly, God's new thing requires perception. Keep your eyes fixed on Jesus. And then as we keep in step with God's new thing, we will be being a beacon of hope in this community to the glory of the Lord in all that we are and do. Amen. Amen.
Thank you so much, Lynn. Let's just take a moment just to be still for a second or two, just to hear what God has been saying into our hearts for a moment.